80s. Chance for showers and thunderstorms in the afternoon. Looking ahead to Thursday, sunny, highs 83 to 87.
Hello, I'm Neil Cooksall.
And I'm Chris Howden. Coming up on As It Happens.
Staying power, there's always been a contingent of Albertans who believes their province should separate from the rest of Canada. And lately, their voices have been getting louder to the point where they want a referendum on it. A former deputy premier tells us he wants people in the province to affirm their desire to stay, so he started a petition of his own.
And the neighbors are having a party. Today is Canada Day. So we'll call up a New York radio station that is dedicating a day of programming to Canadian music by way of celebration and apology.
Those stories and more coming up for you on the Tuesday edition of As It Happens.
We will have more ahead from As It Happens in a few minutes here on People Powered KAXC. I'm Jennifer Barr. Support comes from North Homes Children and Family Services, providing compassionate mental health services to children and families at home, school, and in the community. More information at northhomes.org. We also thank Music on Mount Itasca, taking place Saturday, July 12th, starting at 5 p.m., featuring local food trucks and live music from Brothers Burn Mountain and Morning Bird. Tickets and information at Mount Itasca's Facebook page. Let's sample our album of the week. It is Boleros Psicodelicos 2 by Adrian Quesada. Quesada is based in Austin, Texas, and their first Boleros Psicodelicos album was recorded remotely during the pandemic. And for the second album, Quesada wanted to work alongside his collaborators in the studio to capture a different kind of energy. This album features many collaborations of contemporary artists from a variety of Latin backgrounds, including Colombian, Chilean, Cuban, and more. The song we're going to hear tonight is called Ojos Secos, featuring Cuco.
Thank you.
I'm Neil Kirksall.
Good evening. I'm Chris Howden. This is As It Happens. Tonight.
Remain attraction. In a bid to thwart talk of separation, a new petition is asking Albertans if they want to stay in Canada. The former politician behind that push tells us why he's confident the results will go his way.
Northern Exposure, a volunteer at a radio station south of the border, goes all in on Canada Day by programming 24 hours of exclusively Canadian music.
Glass Calf Full will revisit my interview with the CEO of Métis Crossing in Smoky River, Alberta, when the wildlife park was celebrating the birth of 7 new bison calves, a century and a half after the last wild bison were seen there.
A show of hands and feet, a cross-border rivalry between the top-ranking jogglers in Canada and the U.S., as in joggers who juggle, obviously, was not always a toss-up.
Larger than leaf from our archives, a conversation with the 9-year-old who found the largest maple leaf ever recorded, which turns out to be a real rake-up call.
And the way she gives the cake really takes the cake. Every Canada Day, a baker in one Ontario community makes a cake big enough to feed thousands. We'll talk to her as her massive cake makes the high-stakes journey from the kitchen to the center of town. As It Happens, the Canada Day edition, radio that knows the thing about a layer cake is it always ends in tears. Do you agree that Alberta should remain in Canada? That's the question asked by a new citizens' petition. And it's not separatists asking, it's a group that's trying to head them off at the pass. It's being called the Alberta Forever Canada Petition, and former Alberta Deputy Premier Thomas Lukaszek is behind it. Starting on Friday, the Alberta government will officially make it easier for citizens to initiate a province-wide referendum on any subject, including separation. So Mr. Lukaszek is taking advantage of a first-come, first-served rule to get his petition approved before a rival campaign pushing for an independence referendum. We reached Thomas Lukaszek in Edmonton.
Thomas Lukaszek, the fact that you put this application forward at all suggests that you're seriously worried that separation could become a reality. Is that accurate?
Not despite the fact that there is a very vocal, but also very small minority of Albertans who would actually seriously consider separation. I think the collateral damage takes place when we are discussing the possibility of separation is just as devastating. You know, we saw what happened in Quebec during the referenda. Business and investment evaporated. We saw what happened with Brexit. So the economic damage to Alberta and all of Canada is irreparable as a result of these discussions. But it goes further. You know, we live in a very turbulent world, and our federal government should be focused on building our economy, forging new relationships abroad, and being divided internally is nothing but a distraction. It actually plays into the hands of our adversaries who are hoping to destabilize our democratic institutions. So I decided to put an end to this, and hopefully this referendum will accomplish that.
As our listeners heard, the question you are putting forward is, do you agree that Alberta should remain in Canada? The question the group promoting independence would have posed, should their application have been chosen first, is, quote, do you agree that the province of Alberta shall become an independent country and cease to be a province of Canada? From where you sit, what matters more, who puts this petition forward or how the question is posed?
Both. But I think what is most important is who runs this campaign, who is in charge of this process. This conversation must be led by Canadians who are proud of being Canadians, who care about the future of Canada as a whole, and who are going to campaign based on facts. So it is very important that this campaign is run properly and is constructive and not promotes further deterioration and anger.
I spoke with Dennis Modrey from the Alberta Prosperity Society back in May. We'll play for you and our listeners a little bit of what he told us at that time.
Separate sort of implies that the land of Alberta is going to be moved somewhere else. What we're really talking about is sovereignty. Sovereignty for the individual and sovereignty for the province, which really means self-control, controlling one's future, controlling one's ability to purchase the goods and services that they want, to not be oppressed by values that don't align with the values here, to get out from under the oppression of censorship.
What do you make of that reasoning?
What Mr. Modrey echoes is what Danielle Smith is saying, and she has this, I would call a word salad of a phrase. She talks about Alberta's sovereignty within United Canada. It has no legal basis, and frankly, if you were to paraphrase it, it really means, I am single within the confines of my marriage. It just makes no sense whatsoever. But she's playing a very dangerous game. She is trying to keep openly declared separatists in her caucus and cabinet and in her party membership happy. But at the same time, she does not want to come out as a fully fledged separatist. So she passes bills to make separatism referenda easier, but at the same time, chooses to wash her hands off of it.
In her Canada Day statement today, Danielle Smith, she released that earlier before our conversation, and it reads in part, quote, "Alberta helps power, feed, and drive this country forward from our energy and our agriculture to our innovation and entrepreneurship. Alberta is a driving force for good in a united and prosperous Canada," unquote. Just part of the Premier's statement. That wording, does that give you any confidence that she's leaning a different direction now?
No, not at all. It's Canada Day, so she chooses to say that. Let's not forget that she is proclaiming Bill 54, which is a bill designed to help separatists have a referendum on American Independence Day on July 4th. So Danielle Smith can negotiate with Prime Minister Carney or any prime minister for that matter, different terms of our federal relations, but she should not be allowed to hold a gun to the rest of Canada's head and threaten separation if she doesn't get it her way. And my referendum will simply take that gun away from her hands.
You know very well that this sentiment predates Danielle Smith as well. There are many Albertans who are unhappy and feel that they and their province are not getting their due.
I am not questioning the anger or certain Albertans' dissatisfaction. You know, that's fine. And there are reasons to be unhappy. But the fact is that in a country, those are things that we negotiate. Those are things that we discuss. There are tables at which premiers sit down once a year and all cabinet ministers sit down once a year. There is a process to negotiate that. But that process should never include the threat of separation, because as unlikely as it could possibly happen, because there are actually legal barriers to unilateral declaration of separation, it is simply not constructive. It destabilizes our country. It causes us to lose focus on the bigger game, which right now is negotiating with the United States, with the European Union, and growing our national economy as a whole.
You now have to collect 600,000 signatures in just a matter of months. How are you feeling about the chances that you'll actually make that number?
Or extremely positive. As a matter of fact, my personal goal is to get many, many more. And I can tell you, judging by the response, I literally cannot go to a store right now without several people asking me, where do I sign? How do I volunteer? There has been a lot of negativism in Alberta and perpetuated by Alberta's government. And this sort of unhappiness is keeping Danielle Smith in power. But I'm noticing that Albertans are tired of being told how unhappy they really are and are latching onto something positive.
And if you don't hit that number, though?
But you know what? I don't even consider that. Yeah, I've been in politics for 15 years. And so if I have to personally go from door to door for the next 3 months, I will do it.
Thomas Lukaszczyk, I appreciate your time. Thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Thomas Lukaszczyk is a former deputy premier of Alberta. He's in Edmonton. For months now, we've been covering the vertiginous ups and downs of the Canada-U.S. relationship and its impacts on the economy, immigration, domestic policy, travel patterns, and a lot more. And on the other side of the border, in New York State, Eric Corley has also been watching and listening, and now he wants other Americans to listen too. Mr. Corley is a volunteer with WUSB, the radio station at Stony Brook University. And today for Canada Day, that station is playing 24 nonstop hours of exclusively Canadian music. We reached Eric Corley in Stony Brook.
Happy Canada Day to you, Eric.
Happy Canada Day.
Have you ever celebrated this day before?
You know, I never actually celebrated it. I've observed it, but I didn't really know what to do. And this year, I felt like, well, maybe there's something I can do. And I kind of talked to some friends at the local radio station, and we came up with a plan.
And here we are. The Canadian content began at midnight. Were you up at the stroke of midnight?
I've been up all day. I'm going to be up until the next midnight happens. And yes, that first show was a hip hop show. It was awesome. I was listening and the guys were talking about Canadian ice hockey teams. They really got into the spirit, and it was really an amazing show.
And we have some incredible hip hop icons really from Canada. So I'm glad you started there. As we're speaking to you now, we're about halfway through the full day of programming. How is it going from your perspective so far as the person who came up with this idea?
It's going amazingly well. I mean, you know, the problem is whenever I hear something on the speaker, I want to hear more. I want to listen to the songs. I want to know what the songs are. And if our listeners are having that kind of a reaction, then it's definitely a good thing.
What was the point you decided that you needed to do something, that you wanted to do something?
You know, earlier in the year, all the nonsense that was being spouted by our government towards your country, that bothered, I think, just about everybody. When I looked up when July 1st was, I realized this is a Tuesday, we can make it work. If there are other people interested in doing this, let's do it. And the idea just kind of came fast at that point. Everyone had a plan for a particular type of a program. I focused on the music of Newfoundland and also Indigenous music. You know, I'm not an expert on either one of those, but I'm a great admirer of each. And I did research, I put together a couple of shows, and I'm more of a fan now than I ever was before.
Well, it's so great that they're going to be exposed to all of this, your listeners. As you were doing that research, how did you approach it?
Well, I just did some research on the internet, listened to some Canadian radio, got some Canadian video as well, and just kind of built from there. And I didn't want to stop. It just kept getting more and more interesting. I mean, I found out about the Snotty-Nosed Rez Kids, mm-hmm. which is a rap band from Canada. Yeah. And they're great. They're amazing. I'd never heard of them before. I found out about Gazebo Unit from Newfoundland. They're amazing, too. I found all these Celtic artists from the Maritimes. There is so much music up in Canada that we don't know about in the United States. So that alone is a reason to do this.
You said in your statement about this that there's so much we don't know about our neighbors to the north and so much we're familiar with that we don't know that comes from Canada. I'm paraphrasing you from your statement that you sent out when you decided to do this. What else has surprised you and your colleagues, whether it's musical, something musical or otherwise? What have you learned about Canada that surprised you?
Well, I think the response was more than we expected. People really read what we sent out and paid attention. I have to tell you, American media did not do that. I just find that Canadians seem to listen more. And here in America, we tend to be distracted and always in some kind of a crisis. So getting somebody to take you seriously is a lot harder. But I feel, and I felt this when I've gone to Canada and talked to people, I feel like people are actually receptive, listening, and open to creative conversations. And it's a really healthy thing. And I'm hoping to spread more of that here in the States.
That's lovely to hear. You mentioned, okay, so your segment, your show is going to air in not too long from when we're speaking now, Newfoundland and Labrador. You've got that covered. You mentioned hip-hop earlier. What are the other themes you've got on the go today?
Well, we have a psychedelic show. We have some Acadian music from the Maritimes. We have Canadian punk. We have country shows, a couple of different country shows, French Canadian progressive rock. I pretty much cover a lot of things, but there's so much more.
So you think, well, you're going to bring more days in, you think?
I hope so. I really hope that listeners start requesting this music and that our staff goes out and learns more about Canadian music because, you know, you guys are right next door. It's accessible and it's so inspirational.
What would you like people to take away from this day of Canadian content?
Just, you know, we're not all bad. I mean, there are a few idiots that get all the attention, but I guarantee you the vast, vast majority of Americans do not want the kinds of disrespect that has been hurled towards Canada to be the norm. And anything we can do to prove that we're better than that, we will do.
Eric, I'm glad we could speak. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much.
Eric Corley is a volunteer with WUSB, the radio station at Stony Brook University in Stony Brook, New York. Royalty, dignitaries, and Canadian legends flocked to Le Breton Flats Park in Ottawa today to celebrate Canada Day with speeches and performances, including Mi'kmaq poet Jennifer Alicia Murren, who performed an original poem called Ode to Nature.
Every day, my son says good morning to the sky, birds, flowers, bees, says thank you as he wraps his little body around a tree he... takes time to breathe. I'm teaching him to love and appreciate all living things. We are all interconnected. We all start from a seed. The land carries stories and so do we. Our feet landing in the same sacred spaces. People have been traveling since time immemorial. Indigenous people have been here since time immemorial. A refuge from the chaos that waits for us in the surrounding under the guise of kind eyes and allies, a sanctuary. It's no wonder why she is called Mother Earth, the way nature nurtures us. Her full bloom blanket wrapping us up in the safety of her warmth, reminding us that we are the land and the land is us. She's a caregiver, providing everything that we need, plant medicines, water, ecosystems, trees to breathe. And like a mother, she keeps giving and giving and giving and giving. And as a mother, I know that we will give until there is barely anything left. And if we are the land and the land is us, then we need to reciprocate and fill her up, because I also know that you can't pour from an empty cup. When the world slowed down, we were forced to change the ways we engage with space. We met outside, we sat in parks, we explore places maybe we've never been or truly appreciated, like these huge maples and pines whose roots have been grounded before our lifetime. The faint acoustics of the river carrying stories of salmon survivance and settler violence, from the woodpeckers tap, tap, tapping on the tallest tree, all the way down to the slithering garter snakes. A sacred space, and it is all of our responsibility to be caregivers, to listen, to learn, to respect her as a life giver. When I say all my relations, I really mean all of us. Everything we are and everything we touch is made of stardust. We are the land, and the land is us.
Poet Jennifer Alicia Murren performing Ode to Nature in Ottawa today. You might be barbecuing today or planning to go out and watch fireworks or planning to watch fireworks on YouTube while lying on the couch after eating a bunch of barbecue. But if you're in my hometown of Niagara-on-the-Lake, Ontario, there's a good chance you've spent part of your day in Simcoe Park waiting to be served a slice of a giant Canada Day cake. Every July 1st for over 20 years, local baker Catherine O'Donnell has prepared a cake large enough to feed 3,000 people and paraded it down Queen Street for the town to enjoy. But this year, things are a little bit different. We reached Ms. O'Donnell earlier today as the cake was making its way from the kitchen at Niagara College to the park.
Catherine, how is the cake doing so far? I mean, I'm even afraid to ask you questions because I want to make sure nothing happens to the cake as you walk.
We're walking to the park now, okay. And so I'm walking with a lot of Niagara College students because they allowed us to bake the cake at the school for the facility since it's feeding 3,000. And we're heading to the park where 3,000 people will come and eat cake.
So how far do you have to go as we speak?
We still have about another 8 minutes.
Okay.
To walk down.
What's the total time?
It's usually 25 minutes.
It's a 25-minute transport effort. Okay, you said you had some students.
Out in the heat.
Out in the heat. Okay, yeah. Holding my breath. How many people, what are the logistics involved to get this cake where it needs to go?
There's a pick. It's on a giant trailer that they custom made for it about 10 years ago. And it's nerve-wracking going down with it.
Yeah, I can hear that in your voice, and I hear some chatter behind you. Was that because there was concern about a bump or something?
We went through a pothole.
Oh, my God.
So it's always like, oh, will it stay standing? And that's my big nerve thing. But, I mean, this is I do this for our community because we have such an amazing community. And this year I had to ask for help because I sized my business down, and my community came to bat. We have a new food land coming in. This Leslie Brigman owns it, and she donated the butter. So it's really helped offset the cost because the cake costs usually about $8,500 to make.
Yeah, and you've been, I mean, it's remarkable that you've been doing this all these years, paying out of pocket to do it. What kind of costs were we talking about at this moment in time in this economy? Because a cake that feeds 3,000 people, that's more than a stick or two of butter.
It was 300 pounds of butter.
Oh my.
So it was a lot of ingredients. Mm-hmm. We had to take like 8 trips to the college. We had to use 3 vans to get it from the college to back to the bakery to put it onto the cart. So it's a lot of logistics, but the town comes out in droves, and financially they have been amazing because we did a GoFundMe and people are just giving money, and it's been amazing.
How much did you raise in the end? How much did it cost to make this?
We were calculating last night, we're probably at about $9,200.
Wow.
And we were at about $8,600 by last night, counting the butter and stuff like that that's in it.
Oh, that's remarkable. The cheers, we couldn't help but hear those, obviously. What were they cheering?
They're cheering because the cake has actually gotten this far.
Yeah.
So...
Oh, you're almost there. You're almost there.
We're almost there. Yes, we are.
And you're so wonderful for taking time to talk to us at this particular moment. You mentioned the cake. The theme is Canadian Wilderness Fun. You always pick a theme. Why did you pick that one this year?
Because I've been a chef for a long time, and I've started to realize I went to a conference this year and nobody's wearing the white jacket. So they're trying to bring back at World Chefs the white jacket. That's you've earned this title. And so I thought, oh, what about Anna? I love the wilderness. And I hadn't done really a wilderness one, so I thought a white jacket with skunks and raccoons. And I had some ex-employees come to my house, and we sat and made animals on my kitchen counter because we don't eat this stuff, but it's edible. And it's an amazing experience because we get to play with food, which we don't get to do normally.
Yeah. Canada Day, clearly, you always have fun with it every year. It's taken on a different meaning and feel for many people across the country this year. Does it feel different to you?
I think that we're more proud. I think that Canadians, we've really kind of stepped up and said, hey, we're Canadian and pay attention. And the streets here in Niagara-on-the-Lake are packed, which means people have come out to celebrate.
You mentioned downsizing your business. That's you clearly sound upbeat, and you're obviously caught up in the moment of what you're doing right now. But that's not a small thing. You had that business for a long time.
I had the business for 21 years, and I decided to downsize it because I have an amazing granddaughter I raised, and I wanted to have moments with her. And I found that you're working 7 days a week when you're that big.
Sure.
And so now I get to pick and choose what I'd like to do.
And you still wanted to do this? You could have said, I'm out.
No, I can't. It's too much fun. It really is fun. We spend weeks and weeks and weeks working on it. And when you see it all come together today, it's like, damn, this is fun.
So, let me just ask you, what are you seeing around you? How close are you now?
Well, they've just stopped because the band is going to start. So they've kind of stopped us so that the band can play. So they have the band from Fort George will actually take us down into the park. There's your band playing. Can you hear it?
Yeah.
Yeah. So they will play until we go down the hill. So.
And they do this every year?
Every year. Yep. And then all the politicians are here and the whole street is lined with people. And then they follow down into the park. And then all these volunteers help slice up the cake and give it to all the people in the park for free.
How long does it take to slice it up?
Only half an hour. That's what's funny, how fast it goes. This one's, guys, I'm going to get you to walk either ahead of it or behind so that people can see the cake.
Sure.
They can't see through yet. Sorry.
I mean, obviously, the cake is...
Well, you do all the work. You don't want people not to be able to take their photo of it.
Okay, thanks for going.
Hi, sorry. We're just getting everything ready to cut now. So,
Catherine, you've been so generous with your time. I heard the cheers there. The cake is safe, yes?
Yes, cake is safe.
Congratulations to you, and I hope you get some rest. Happy, happy Canada Day, Catherine.
Happy Canada Day to you, too. Thank you.
Catherine O'Donnell is the owner of Willow Cakes. We reached her in Niagara-on-the-Lake. Now here's Olivia Ridgely with Hot Cakes.
Momentary after, I wonder what it takes to get insured to drive a gray Camaro. Think I've blown it every moment that I ask for, and then you took the bait. Yet I can't tell, is this the grand finale? How long did you drive for? Baby tells me different stories. Claire, how long did you cry for? He wouldn't take the bait, and I'm in hell.
Olivia Ridgely with Hot Cakes.
We're going to take a short break now. When we return, a special Canada Day edition of As It Happened to look back at a slice of our show's proud history of sharing Canadian stories.
With a Chevy heart, an Ontario man was on a quest to find his dream car, which he was forced to sell after getting sick. A Saskatchewan man was inspired to help him. And we'll hear the moment As It Happens introduce them to each other.
Stay tuned. I'm Neil Kirksall.
And I'm Chris Howe.
Thank you for listening to As It Happens on People Powered KAXE. Good evening, I'm Jennifer Barr. Coming up at 7 o'clock, Heather Kidd, your volunteer host for On the River, a great mix of music. And 10 o'clock, more great music on Headwaters with Malachi Coons. Partly cloudy overnight, lows 59 to 63, and slight chance of showers and thunderstorms tomorrow afternoon. Otherwise, mostly sunny, highs in the low to mid 80s. For Thursday, sunny, highs 83 to 87. Thank you to the members who support KAXE. Thank you to the members of KAXE. Your support brings all kinds of local information to our communities, great music, local news, green cheese trivia, so much more. You can become a sustaining member starting at $5 per month or give a one-time gift at kaxe.org. Thank you so much for your support. We continue now with As It Happens.
Hello, I'm Neil Kirksall.
Good evening, I'm Chris Howden. This is As It Happened, the Canada Day edition. Tonight.
Apropos of something, it feels like a pretty good time to celebrate the people who make this country what it is, from coast to coast to coast and beyond. So we're going to look back at our show's long history of bringing inspiring stories about Canadians to Canadians.
Heard to believe. In the 19th century, wild bison were on the brink of extinction, so it was cause for celebration in Alberta and amongst Métis people especially, when a herd added 7 new calves.
2 minutes later, the baby was up and running around. It was phenomenal.
Wow.
I mean, as a mother who's given birth, that was amazing.
Running with the balls. In 2006, As It Happens, closely followed a cross-border rivalry when two remarkable athletes, one Canadian and one American, went head-to-head in the Boston Marathon, vying to see who was the faster joggler, which, of course, is someone who juggles while jogging.
A lot of times people would look to their right and see a joggler and say, whoa, and then they'd look to their left and be like, oh my gosh, there are two of them.
And leave on a high note, a 9-year-old tells us about getting a phone call from the people at Guinness World Records when it turned out the big maple leaf that he'd found was actually the biggest maple leaf anyone ever found.
And it was big and colorful. It was at the top of a leaf pile, so I just picked it up.
As It Happened, the archive edition, radio that appreciates the finer things in leaf. When As It Happens first started airing on November 18th, 1968, the idea was to connect with Canadians over the phone and over the radio through a fully live 5-hour broadcast that rolled across all the time zones. Here's what the show sounded like on day one.
We're going to roller coast across the country, talking to you about different stories and ideas, and we hope to be hearing back from you, the listeners, with some of your own ideas and views on the show.
And we'll be roller coastering is the phrase which our producer has coined for this occasion, and the others which we hope will follow it. But the end is 5 hours away.
That's right. So stay with us as it happens.
Really did sound like a roller coaster. And in terms of connection, for a while in the early years, As It Happens even had a classified section. People could call in and record a help wanted ad or an ad for something they wanted to sell, or if they were looking for romance, an ad for themselves. And we would broadcast that ad on national radio.
Gordon Wilson, I am a 40-year-old bachelor who is a federal public servant and has recently built himself a comfortable 3-bedroomed, fully winterized cottage in a unique situation overlooking a ski lodge in a developing resort area near Ottawa, where I reside year-round. I would like to share this little paradise on a permanent basis with some quiet, self-reliant young lady with no dependents, but with a genuine love for the great outdoors and winter sports, etc.
Now, obviously, the show has changed in some ways. We no longer roller coaster, for example. But connecting with Canadians and connecting Canadians with each other is still a central part of As It Happens. In 2023, we introduced a couple of Canadians to each other and to you. One was looking for something, and one had that something. And both shared a passion for a particular classic car. Greg Henderson of Tobermory, Ontario, had spoken to our colleagues in London about his dream car, a red and white 1955 Chevrolet 210, which he had once owned but been forced to sell in 2015 after he got sick and couldn't work. Brad Fritzky of Yorkton, Saskatchewan, heard that story and was moved. So he called the London newsroom, hoping to get in touch with Mr. Henderson. And that's when As It Happens comes in. The two men hadn't spoken to each other at that point, so Neil got Greg and Brad on the phone to make an introduction.
Greg, meet Brad. Brad, hi, meet Greg.
Hello, Greg. Good to meet you.
Is this bizarre?
This is bizarre, yes.
But it's actually quite a, well, it's a lovely story, but I want to go back to the beginning. So I will start with you, Greg. 2015, and you need to make a really difficult decision, and you decide to sell your 1955 Chevrolet 210. What was that like?
You know, you're sometimes stuck in a tough position, and you make a decision. I thought it'd be better to keep the house and get rid of the car. And it's one of those things, you don't know what you've got till it's gone. And within months of selling the car, I realized I'd made a mistake.
Why was it so meaningful to you? What was your connection to this car?
Well, the money came from life insurance from when my brother passed away in 2007. Even though he was not a car guy or liked that kind of car or anything, it was a bit of a connection. You know, I'd lost my brother, and this car and being in the car and driving the car made me happy, and I needed something to, you know, lift my spirits, as it were. And just the memories of driving that car in the summer, I still think of it today.
You also love a particular movie. That's another layer of connection to this.
Oh, yeah. So one of my favorite movies is American Graffiti. It's a very iconic movie, and there's many great classic cars, but my favorite was the 55 Chevy that was driven by Alfalfa, played by Harrison Ford.
I remember that. Brad, that love of that movie is just one of the ways you two, strangers, maybe not anymore, you have a connection on that front. So why were you so moved when you heard Greg's story?
To start off, I'm a cancer survivor now, and 61 years old, and when I read his story, a 55 Chev car, to me, I've had several. One of my first cars was a 210 two-door Post when I was in high school in the late 70s. And they're more than a car. Like, I feel sorry for this younger generation. They might not experience what I felt in the 70s and having that car. It was, it's not like a Honda Accord of today. It was a 55 Chev, and it's just so iconic for me. And a lot of people from that era are the same age as me. Yeah, seeing that movie in 73, it just, that black 55, that was the one for me. And as I got older, that's where I went down that path, getting one of those cars. And then reading about Greg, I just touched my heart too. Like, there's sometimes in life, I feel I have a second chance as a cancer survivor, and I just want to do my part to help out and just let Greg have another chance at having a car like he had.
That was Greg Henderson and Brad Fritzky speaking to Neil in 2023. Whenever possible, we tell you where we've reached our guests. And we've reached tens of thousands of guests over the last 50-plus years. And we've reached them all over Canada, sometimes in unusual places with unusual names and origins. On Canada Day 1987, co-hosts Al Maitland and Dennis Trudeau took it upon themselves to investigate some of Canada's more peculiar place names.
Now, of course, we've all heard of dildo. But what about pickeye? Leading Tickles West.
I'll buy that.
Or Dumplin Harbor.
We received many suggestions, and one name we thought we had to find out more about was Blow Me Down. And who better to tell us than William Porter, who's lived there all his life?
William Porter, why is it called Blow Me Down?
I got a call around this afternoon to a few people, and they used to have high gusts of winds come over the headlands. And it used to bounce off the other mountains and that, and it'd blow, and it'll blow you off your feet. And there's no place there to get out of it. It's all out in the open. And when the wind comes in from the north, you haven't got a prayer.
It's called Blow Me Down because it'll blow you down?
That's why it's called Blow Me Down, because the wind will blow you down.
That's William Porter speaking to Dennis Trudeau in 1987. They reached Mr. Porter in Blow Me Down, Newfoundland and Labrador. Alan Dennis also did some investigating into the origins behind the place named Toad River in British Columbia, which seemed like it would be pretty straightforward. To find out more, they called Bob Price, who ran the Toad River Lodge.
Bob Price, if your place is named Toad River, you must have a lot of you-know-whats.
Oh, we do have the odd ones left. What had happened, in the late 30s, there was a bunch of trappers camped over here in our flats. And in the morning, there was two bears come in and stampeded their horses, and they named it Bear Flats. Then when the American Army came up here, they had a 2,500-man camp here. And where the lodge is situated is on the south side of the highway. This is where the officers' quarters were, and they called it Skunk Hollow. Of course, I guess this wasn't a very appropriate name for him. And at that time, there were an awful lot of these little green toads in the place. So they then named it the Toad River.
Bear Flats became Skunk Hollow, which became Toad River.
Right.
You're listening to our archival show, As It Happened, the Canada Day edition on CBC Radio 1 and on public radio in the United States. Before the formation of Canada and before anyone was considering naming a place Blow Me Down or Toad River, the land was home to diverse and abundant populations of fish, birds, and mammals. But when settlers arrived in the 19th century, those once healthy populations of wildlife were decimated by overhunting and habitat loss. Some were driven nearly to extinction, including wild bison in Alberta. So in 2023, it was a very big deal when a population of wild bison expanded after seven calves were born at Métis Crossing Wildlife Park north of Edmonton, 160 years after the last wild bison were seen in the region. At the time, Neil spoke with Juanita Marwa, CEO of Métis Crossing, in Smoky River, Alberta.
We were there when they were born, right?
Yes, I was there when one of them was born.
And what stands out in your mind from watching that?
The amazing process of nature. So we pulled up in the vehicle and I could see that the mama, the cow bison, was kind of huffing and puffing. And so we just kind of stopped to watch her. And the rancher I was with, who knows bison like the back of his hand, said, she's about to give birth. And I looked, I'm like, wow, that's amazing. So we sat there for not more than 15 minutes and she huffed and she puffed and she pushed it out. She was standing up and the baby kind of hit the ground and then she turned around and bit the sack and licked it off. And 2 minutes later, the baby was up and running around. It was phenomenal.
Wow.
I mean, as a mother who's given birth, that was amazing.
You talked about the significance, for Métis people to see bison beginning to thrive again in Alberta. Just tell me about what that means to you.
Well, the Métis people and bison, our history is absolutely intertwined. So the Métis people are children of the fur trade. If the fur trade did not exist in Canada, we as a nation of Indigenous people would not exist. And certainly we began to thrive in what is now Canada, before it was Canada, along with the buffalo. So we would follow the buffalo across the prairies. In the spring and in the summer, our communities would gather to have the buffalo hunt. And we would come together in groups as large as 1,500 people. And they would know to come together from across what is now Alberta, Saskatchewan, and Manitoba. And when you think about 1,000 bison running across the plains, and you're on the back of a horse chasing them down, that's a life and death situation for those hunters on that horseback. But not only that, also for the community, because we didn't have Costco, we didn't have Safeway. If that hunt wasn't successful, our communities didn't flourish.
That was the CEO of Métis Crossing, Juanita Marwa, speaking to Neil in 2023. Canada versus the United States, a natural cross-border sports rivalry, especially when the sport is hockey. The countries have faced off against one another in huge games over and over again in Olympic gold medal matches.
Back to Fortino. Fortino rolling puck down low. Shot, scores! It's Poulin again! Canada wins gold in overtime!
Or more recently in the Four Nations face-off.
Here we go.
shot on. Kerr sends it around. Marner waiting. Connor McDavid scores!
So happens we randomly selected two examples in which Canada won. That's fine. Canadians often do better than their American competitors on the ice, but that has been the case on the track, too. In 1997, Canadian Donovan Bailey and American Michael Johnson were two of the fastest people in the world, both winning gold medals in track and field events in the previous year's Olympic Games. And so, to determine who was faster, the two sprinters took part in a one-off 150-meter race in the Sky Dome in Toronto. Donovan Bailey crossed the finish line first, but as you heard, in the final stretch, Michael Johnson started limping as if he were injured. So there was unfortunately no definitive answer to the question, who is the fastest person in the world? This is what Donovan Bailey had to say after the race.
He didn't finish.
He didn't pull up. He's a chicken. He didn't pull up at all. He's just a chicken. He's afraid to lose. I think what he should do is we should run this race over again so I can kick one more time.
Some tough words for Mr. Johnson there. Almost a decade later, as it happens, followed a similarly feisty rivalry between two premier athletes in their field.
Zach had beaten my record, so I immediately challenged him to a duel because he broke it by 41 seconds, which in marathon running is kind of the blink of an eye. So I thought it would make a great showdown.
And Zach, you obviously accepted.
I did, yeah. Well, it was too much fun to pass up.
From 2006, that's Canadian Mikkel Kaprel and American Zach Warren speaking to guest host Christopher Thomas before their duel to determine who was faster. The stage, the Boston Marathon. The sport, joggling.
Mikkel, let me start with you. What is joggling?
Joggling is a combination of jogging or running and juggling.
Juggling what?
Juggling anything. I juggle balls.
So three balls going around in a circle while you're running?
In a cascade pattern, so alternating sides. Oh,
excuse me. Zach, is that what you used to?
That's right, three bean bags, yeah.
Three bean bags?
Yeah, we're moving in the symbol of the infinity on its side.
Oh, so it's not just athletics, it's spiritualism as well.
You might say that, yeah.
And Mikkel, are yours bean bags as well?
No, mine are extra balls. They're custom-made joggling balls.
And why do you do this?
It's fun, and it's challenging.
Yeah, that's for sure.
It's a whole lot of fun. It's a great, it's good exercise.
Zach, are you two the only guys that do this?
No. Right? Are we?
No. Okay. No, there are quite a few people who do it. We're just the fastest.
That's what this race is going to determine who is the fastest, right?
Yes.
How did this race come about, Mikkel?
Well, I set the joggling marathon record last year at the Scotiabank Toronto Waterfront Marathon. A few months later, from a reporter out of Boston saying that Zach had beaten my record, so I immediately challenged him to a duel because he broke it by 41 seconds, which in marathon running is kind of the blink of an eye, so I thought it would make a great showdown.
And Zach, you obviously accepted.
I did, yeah. Well, it was too much fun to pass up. Honestly, it was his own fault for breaking the record that inspired me to try to break it after him. So I saw the article forwarded to me from a friend in Canada, and he said, why don't you go for this? So I thought, okay, sure.
From 2006, that was Canadian Mikkel Kaprel and American Zach Warren speaking to guest host Christopher Thomas ahead of the Boston Marathon, where they would finally determine who was the fastest joggler. And since you're on the edge of your seat waiting to hear the results of the race, you are in luck. As it happens, got in touch with both men again a week later about Mr. Warren's victory. Here they are speaking to guest host Helen Mann.
Congratulations, first of all, to both of you. Zach, I guess in particular, first of all, how are you holding up today? You must be a little bit achy at the very least.
Yeah, my body feels like a cross between the Tin Man and Gumby.
That's a good description. Mikkel, what about you?
I have aches just about everywhere, and my eyes really hurt, I think, just from trying to look at too many things at once.
Well, that's interesting. That's probably something most marathoners don't have. You actually have a specific joggler injury.
Yeah, I have an injury in my hand, too, an overuse injury in my right hand.
Oh,
really hurts.
You guys are the true athletes, then.
Sorry about that.
Now, Mikhail, you guys ran most of this race together. How was it doing that in the Boston Marathon?
Well, it was actually hilarious. At the beginning, I just had these fits of laughter because I had never run with another joggler. So just seeing Zach next to me was making me laugh. It was really distracting because we were in this pack of huge piles of runners and trying to navigate our way there. And something about it, just the absurdity of it, was making me laugh.
What about the people running beside you, though? Were they too pleased?
Yeah, I think a lot of them laughed. I remember one guy ran up to us and said, "I just want to let you know you made my day." So we got a lot of, I think, really positive comments, and a lot of times people would look to their right and see a joggler and say, "Whoa!" and then they'd look to their left and be like, "Oh my gosh, there are two of them."
That was not the end of the juggling saga. Mr. Caprell recaptured the world record for fastest marathon juggling three objects later that year. And he holds the fastest time in that particular category of long distance running to this day. In fact, that's one of several Guinness World Records Mr. Caprell holds. He recently set the world record for longest distance run while juggling three balls at 115 kilometers. Afterwards, he wrote on social media that in the final stretch, quote, "I wanted nothing more than to lie down at the side of the trail and cry myself to sleep," unquote. It sounds like that might be one of the most challenging world records held by a Canadian. But in 2010, Joseph Donato of Pickering, Ontario, may have set the most fitting world record held by a Canadian. At the time, Mr. Donato was 9 years old, and he had found the biggest maple leaf ever recorded. Here he is speaking to Carol.
Hi, Joseph.
Hi.
How's your maple leaf?
It's good.
Is it starting to drying out quite a bit now?
Yeah.
How big is it?
It's 13 and 5/8 wide by 15 and 5/8 long.
Is that in inches?
Yeah.
Now, where did you find it?
Somewhere on my street.
Just on your own street?
Yeah, I'm just walking.
This huge maple leaf?
Yeah.
Are you often looking for big leaves?
No.
So what got you to do this time?
Well, because it was so big, so I was like riding my bike and I saw it, and it was big and colorful. And it was at the top of a leaf pile, so I just picked it up.
Now, how do you know that it might be the biggest maple leaf anyone has ever found in the world?
Well, I haven't seen any bigger leaves than that, so I'm pretty convinced.
But now, the Guinness World Records people have talked to you about your leaf, haven't they?
Yeah.
What do they say?
They said it is the biggest.
Have they ever had a contest for who has the biggest maple leaf?
No.
So you might be the first?
Because it's a new record.
Oh, you're going to start a new record with Guinness.
Yes.
That was 9-year-old Joseph Donato speaking to Carol in 2010.
You've been listening to As It Happens from CBC, heard across the United States on public radio.
You can also find As It Happens wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Chris Howden. Thanks for listening.
And I'm Neil Kirksall. Take care.